Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interestingly enough, Mexico, their Supreme Court evidently voted unanimously to decriminalize abortion, while our state of Texas has figured out a way to not only almost ban it completely, but to turn its citizens into little bounty hunters, going to go chasing after each other and reporting on each other, snitching on each other. We're going to turn into a snitch society. Now, you know, people were upset that they didn't make any exemptions for rape or incest. And thank goodness for Governor Greg Abbott, because he has figured out how to make sure that no one ever gets pregnant through rape. This is fantastic. He's going to make it illegal. Yeah, that's it. He's going to make rape illegal. It's going to be done. No exceptions. It's kind of crazy. Here to share some thoughts on this great thought on how we're going to make rape illegal, I've asked Chris Hahn to come talk with us. He's a syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can check out his stuff over at ChristopherHahn.com. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm good. So the governor of Georgia, or Texas, might as well be Georgia. The governor of Texas is now, he's figured it out. He's going to end rape.
Yeah, Minority Report was trending on Twitter all day today, and I was like wondering why. I love that movie. I happen to think Tom Cruise is one of the best movie stars, frankly. But it was trending because obviously Greg Abbott has found those special kids. I can't remember what they were called, who would tell you when a crime was going to be committed. Horrible.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy, but he's going to eliminate all rapists. And look, Texas is a kill 'em state. So is this, we're just going to go kill the rapists? Is this what he's talking about? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know what this guy's been talking about ever, frankly. He's so afraid of Dan Patrick primarying him and losing, you know, the governorship. And I don't know, maybe he has his eye on some sort of national office, but whether it be president or something else, that he is just, you know, really just going to bizarre lengths to be the most conservative guy in America, whether it comes to abortion, voting, COVID. He just wants to do whatever he can to appear to be as far to the right as possible.
Yeah, it's crazy. But here's the thing. There's part of me, and I'm hoping I'm right here. And obviously, you've been doing this a very long time. You're as a Democratic strategist, you know the game. I think this is a massive overreach. I have seen women who have never been political finally coming awake to the reality that the Republican Party, not their friends.
Oh, it's a gift. I don't think we're talking about Afghanistan anymore, are we, Rick? And I thought we might be talking about it the rest of the year. The 2022 election will be about Roe v. Wade. It'll be about choice, period. That is the election. And there's virtually nothing they can do between now and then to change that unless the Republicans in the Senate decide to codify Roe v. Wade into law so that it it's not an issue in 2022. And I don't see them doing that.
Yeah, but
so I fully expect choice to be the issue, and hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And they have scorned half the population of this country. So good luck.
No. And this is one of those moments where I'm going, you know, because I've known people who have said, no, they're never going to be able to get away with this. The Supreme Court will never allow it to happen. I'm going, they just did.
Yeah, they just did. And frankly, there are all sorts of precedents that they just blew by here. Forget about Roe v. Wade. I mean, that's a major precedent. But other precedents about government delegating police powers and governmental powers to an individual who can arbitrarily enforce them. You can't do that in America. There are dozens of precedent in law with that the Supreme Court had to ignore not to grant injunctive relief, which says to me that we've got a bunch of zealots on the Supreme Court that are just going to do whatever it takes to get rid of Roe. And whether it's, if this case gets back to the Supreme Court, I believe it will probably very soon, they may overturn the Texas law, but I don't see them overturning the Missouri law, which will in and of itself get rid of Roe.
Or the Mississippi one. Isn't there a Mississippi law as well?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the Mississippi law, but I know that the Missouri law is on the docket. for the spring session of the Supreme Court. So yeah, hand down the decision getting rid of Roe at the beginning of the summer next year. Fantastic.
Good. Just so you can get out of Dodge.
Good planning. Good planning. I know that this has been 35 years of planning by the Federalist Society and, you know, right wing nuts in the conservative movement and the Republican Party. But the timing couldn't be worse for them. You know, look, I think gerrymandering probably gets them the House no matter what happens. Probably. And I say probably because I do think this is a really bad thing for them to be doing right now. But this saved the Senate, the Democrats. The Democrats are going to pick up seats in the Senate.
No, this is
and
huge.
And I said on my radio show 2 weeks ago, you know, I quite frankly believe that you have an opportunity here to maybe pick off a senator right now. Lisa Murkowski, why are you still a Republican? You're pro-choice. They're not going to nominate you in Alaska. Time to come over. Just come over. It's fine. You can be like Angus King. You can be an independent, whatever. Caucus with us. Get rid of the filibuster and let us pass a few things like voting reform.
No, we absolutely need it. And this is one of those moments where I was going to bring that up at some point. Do we not have to start talking about passing some legislation and the filibuster standing in the way of getting anything done?
Yeah, we got to do it, right? I mean, look, everybody's gnashing their teeth over Joe Manchin. First of all, there are 50 Republicans who are worse than Joe Manchin, all 50 of them. Yep. Any one of them on any day is worse than Joe Manchin. I'll take Joe Manchin over anyone. Second, I don't think Joe Manchin wants his legacy to be the guy who stood in the way of voting reform that would ensure people had the right to vote in this country. I don't think that's who he is. So let him say what he's got to say right now. I know he's, you know, given us agita over Biden's Build Back Better plan, over the infrastructure package. I know he's given us all sorts of grief. Just relax. You know, he voted to move it forward. He's going to vote to pass it. It's going to get tweaked. It might not be $3.5 trillion. It might be $3.4 trillion. We'll be fine. It'll be fine. And by the way, it's a 10-year spending plan. So it's not like it's real money anyway. So just everybody relax.
Yeah, but it is, over the long haul, something we desperately need. And it has to get done. And if it doesn't get done, what do you think the chances are, since you brought this up, what do you think the chances are of us not getting the $1.2 trillion hard infrastructure plan? Because the progressives are going to go, well, if we're not getting this, screw you, we're not going the other way.
We're getting both of them. We're getting both of them, and we're getting them this year.
Okay, that's what I want to hear.
Let me explain something. I don't know if Josh Gottheimer is listening to your program. I know he might listen to my radio show and my podcast. But Josh, you won't get reelected if this stuff doesn't pass. Sorry. It doesn't mean you're going to lose a primary. You're not going to win. No Democrat is safe if we fail to pass this. We remember what happened to the Democrats when Clinton failed to pass his big budget plan, when Obama had issues passing his big plans. Now, you've got to do the work, okay? We're tired of letting the right wing in this country define where the center is.
Yep.
Okay. I appreciate what Bernie Sanders and AOC and others have done to move the debate back to the center by taking positions on the left. Yeah, I think this will get tweaked. It should get tweaked. That's what legislation is. But it's going to pass. And it's going to pass this year. Nancy Pelosi will get it done. And my former boss, Chuck Schumer, will get it done in the Senate.
Yeah, that's what we need. Basically, go big or get sent home. That's right. Been my mindset on this from the very beginning.
But by the way, Rick, nobody's talking about it other than a few people, like a few pundits in Washington. Chuck Todd says stupid stuff about it every couple of days. Joe Manchin will write an op-ed. But nobody, I don't know, you walk around town, you and I are both political. We're known to people as, you know, political types. Nobody comes up to me and says, you know, they better stop that spending plan. Not one person. I've done 2,500 national television appearances. I was at a wedding this week and a lot of people wanted to talk politics to me. Not one person said, you know, how are they going to stop the spending plan? Nobody.
You know, because people want it. Once you find out what's in it, it's going to benefit people. I think it's what we need. It's the kind of reset we've needed for a while. You brought up Chuck Todd there for a second, who took kind of a public spanking by Claire McCaskill, which I think you needed in this moment over this Texas abortion nonsense that's going on. And she said, look, there's no both sides in this, so don't even start with that nonsense.
I can't watch him anymore. Meet the Press used to be a part of my weekend. I used to enjoy it. And frankly, I remember when Chuck Todd, when I first started working in the Senate, Chuck Todd ran like this, it was like a newsletter that was read by everybody in Washington. It was fantastic. It was Daily Wire. It was kind of gossipy. I don't know what happened to him. I guess he's still kind of gossipy. He's unwatchable to me. And, you know, you guys know where my agent is, NBC. Give him a call. I'm available on Sunday mornings. I got nothing else to do but walk the puppy.
And there you go. And I'll put in a good word for you as well. I think you're a good guy. I hope people check out your website, ChristopherHahn.com, where you can pick up the Aggressive Progressive podcast there, right?
That's right. The Aggressive Progressive is available on any podcast platform. You got some weird, you know, iHeartRadio, Apple, Spotify, Pandora. But if you got some weird, you know, quirky podcast system you're using, it's there too for some reason. I don't know how it gets there. It just gets there.
It's everywhere. We got smart people putting stuff out, and that's a good thing. I did want to ask you about what's going on in Portland, because the city of Portland, evidently they've got this emergency resolution banning trade with Texas. So I wanted to get your thoughts over, you know, is this a viable solution, or is this just headline grabbing stuff?
I mean, it's headline grabbing. You know, we have a constitution that says you can't do anything to stop interstate commerce. Everybody just stop. You know, the Texas law is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court, and I'm not, you know, forget about the abortion part of it. You know, you'd have to overturn Roe v. Wade to have the 6-week ban. But having people, you know, with vigilante justice enforcing it, it violates so many laws in the United States, so many provisions of our constitution that have been thoroughly vetted by the Supreme Court over the last 200 years, right? But Portland is doing the same thing. You can't infringe upon interstate commerce. Now, if the mayor of Portland decides that he's not going to buy something from Texas, then he doesn't have to buy things from Texas. But you can't outright ban it. That's an infringement on interstate commerce.
Yeah, I just thought, I saw that. I'm like, boy, if that isn't stupid. But, you know, hey, you got to make your protests where you can. And
yeah,
I'm kind of okay with that. That's the way we go. But you brought up the court. And look, a lot of people now are finally realizing just how bad this court is. I've been saying for years the Supreme Court is horribly anti-worker, horribly anti-working class. All of the things that I've been fuming over all these years, the attacks on labor rights, all of the corporate decisions, because while some may believe that this court was compiled to take Roe away, I don't believe that at all. I believe this court was compiled to take us back to the days of Lochner, take us back to the days where if you were desperate enough and hungry enough to work in poverty conditions for desperation wages, that was your choice, buddy. The abortion part of it was the sweetener on top to get the lunatic fringe to vote for them. So for me, there's a moment here where working class people and women, because abortion is a working class issue, maybe we finally realize to just how horrible this court is.
Well, you know, you bring up Lochner, and most people don't even know what that is, right? But everybody knows what Roe is, and you're right. You're absolutely right. This court has been making small decisions that go unnoticed by most Americans that hurt working men and women every single session. And it's only going to get worse. The fact that they are taking a shot at a well-known decision that everybody is aware of will bring the attention that is finally needed for Americans, particularly Democrats and liberals who tend to doze off in the off years. Get them awake and come out and vote. You know, and I know that Republicans around the country are making it harder to vote, but you know, I feel a wave coming. I do. I feel that the Republicans have revealed themselves for who they are to too many Americans now, and there is no turning back.
This I gotta
big
tell
lie
you.
Nonsense, you know, having a guy like Larry Elder be your leader in California. You know, it's people know, people see what's going on here. And I get it. There's a lot of misinformation. It's going to steer people in a variety of different directions. But when the rubber meets the road, the real messaging here is that the Republicans are taking away rights of Americans every single day. And they're touching them through the courts and through their policies. And you better get with it. You better start electing Democrats at every level of office. And we'll see. We'll see what happens to this California recall next week.
So just so I get this straight, I got to get this straight, Chris, because if I'm getting you right, you're saying this is the moment we finally wake up, because we have these conversations every time the court does something horrible. I had this back in 18 when they rammed through Janus. I had it back when they did the Knox case. I had it back Epic Systems, Johnson Control. All of these things are going, this is the moment. This is now. We're finally going to wake up. Is this that moment we finally wake up?
It's the moment. You know why? Because it's undeniable. People know this decision. They know what's going on
here. I wanted to get that. So is this now the moment where Joe Biden does something like, oh, we're going to pack the courts? Or is this is a voting moment?
It's a voting moment. I think he should pack the courts, because, frankly, Mitch McConnell stole at least one Senate seat. And frankly, you know, there are five people that are put on that court by presidents who were elected with a minority of the vote of this country. So, yeah, I would pack the court. I don't think he's gonna. But I think that we need some significant court reform in this country. And I don't think that the Democrats will have the votes to do that right now. But I do think, like I said, I don't think Joe Manchin's going to allow his legacy to be the guy who stood in the way of election reform and allowed this democracy to crumble. And if he wants that to be his legacy, well, then that's not the guy I know. So I think he's going to change his. I think, you know, I get it. Let him do his thing. Let him play his, you know, his cards the way he needs to play them for his own electability in West Virginia. But at the end of the day, I think Joe Manchin's going to be there when we need him.
Yeah. So last question I've got for you, because, you know, I'm looking at the Supreme Court, and I remember I watched intently all of the justices, confirmation hearings. And I remember John Roberts very clearly, Mr. Balls and Strikes, going to call balls and strikes. He believed in stare decisis. He decided law, wasn't into, you know, rewriting things out of whole cloth. The legacy of the Roberts Court is going to be just that, overturning longstanding precedent, destroying all of that stuff. That's the precedent of.
Well, in his defense, Rick, he did vote with the liberals to hear this case that on the Texas law. He voted with the liberals.
That's the funny part of this. There was a moment where we thought he was the Antichrist and he was bad. He was now he doesn't look that bad.
We take him over Justice Alito or Kavanaugh or Amy Coney Barrett. You know, I still think that Gorsuch, just reading his opinions over the years, I still think that he's a guy, if you can make a black letter law case to, I mean, that doesn't help you in a thing like Roe. But if you can make a black letter law case to Gorsuch is going to come down on the side of black letter law. Gorsuch will, in my opinion, vote to overturn this Texas law because of the, you know, literally over 150 years of precedent of not allowing vigilante justice, not allowing the state to delegate powers to an unaccountable civilian. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you could delegate it to a specific group who you're paying to do that, and there's some sort of contractual relationship. You just can't blanketly say to anyone, go ahead and enforce this law. That's not the way it works in the United States of America.
Yeah. But my problem with Gorsuch, and I hope you're right, I want to believe. But my problem with Gorsuch is this was a guy who was willing to let somebody die on the side of the road because his brakes froze up and gave him the choice of get fired from your job or die. And there was no middle ground. So I got a problem with that. But I hope you're right. I hope he does come around. I hope this does.
He's a weird guy. I don't think he's pro-choice. Don't get me wrong. And I do think that if he's given the opportunity, he will get rid of Roe, because that was what they raised these people to do, right?
Correct.
Federalist Society, they've all raised these people to kill Roe, which ultimately is, you know, it's a murder-suicide plot, because when you kill Roe, you kill the conservative movement in America.
Yeah, this is where I don't go as far with you on this. Yes, Roe was a big part of it. I'm still, their number one goal is decide with corporate America at every turn.
You're right. You're right. But like I said, you could do that because people don't even notice it. It's like the frog boiling in the pot of water here.
Yeah.
It's a slow kill. Roe is a shot to the head and you see the blood all over the place. And now everybody's mad at you for it. And you better run.
Yeah, let's hope they stay mad.
you know?
Yep. I'm right there. Let's hope that they stay mad. And when they get mad, they go to the voting booth and they vote. Chris, I appreciate the time. Always good talking to you, man. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Great to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff. Chris Hahn, syndicated radio host, host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. Find that over at ChristopherHahn.com. We'll get links out on how you can find that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Here's a hot topic for Labor Day. Heat. It's been a hell of a hot summer, exploding the top off thermometers with triple-digit readings across the country. As we're learning, week after week of this debilitating heat intensifies wildfires, causes electric grids to fail, kills millions of wild animals, including fish, burns up crops, and concentrates toxic air. But there's another impact that draws little notice. Heat kills workers. Indeed, searing days of 95, 100, 110 degrees are killing and injuring more U.S. workers each year than all the floods, hurricanes, and tornadoes combined. Those toiling outdoors, including farm workers, roofers and carpenters, airport ground crews, landscapers, road and street repairers, letter carriers, and trash collectors, are in the direct line of fire for this invisible, insidious killer. But working indoors is no better if there's no AC, for metal and stone warehouses and manufacturing plants become ovens. Then, welcome to climate change. 20 of the last 21 years gave us the hottest temperatures on record. Unsurprisingly, the yearly number of worker heat deaths in that period doubled. Also, researchers have determined that extreme workplace heat is causing about 170,000 people a year to suffer injuries on the job. The impact of heat is poorly understood, even by workers. A sudden heat stroke is not the only worry, for rising body temperatures can quickly fuzz the mind, weaken muscles, numb concentration. So workers fall, their hands get caught in machinery, they touch the wrong wire, etc. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's power elites literally don't feel the intensity of this heat. So the richest country in the history of the world continues to subject millions of its people to senseless suffering and death, not even talking about this embarrassment, much less stopping it. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Vietnam, evidently they jailed a guy for 5 years for having the audacity to break the COVID restrictions. Evidently, he broke quarantine rules and spread the virus to other people, according to state media. He got 5 years in jail. 5 years. We got netwits running around trying to deliberately spread it. I'm at the supermarket today. There's a woman basically breathing on my neck. Yeah, I turn around. I'm going, dude, what? You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic kind of thing. You know, have you heard of it? Probably not, because you weren't wearing a mask at the supermarket. Literally, I could feel her breath on my neck. That's how close she was. Can we put her in jail for 5 years? And this is one of those things where you just go, what is wrong with people? What is wrong with us that we can't do the right thing? You know, I had a doctor appointment today, and I went and saw the doctor, and you know, we started talking about this, and she's like, oh, hey, thanks for not being an idiot. And I don't know why she would have thought that I would have been, you know, one of those mask holes. But you know, I said, no, I go, look, you know, I explained the story. I'm going, this is the crazy stuff that goes on. And she's like, you know, I don't get it. I don't get why people are this dumb. How did we get dumb people like this? I go, you know, I don't know. But when people are taking, you know, drinking Clorox and shoving lights up their behinds, I don't know, you know, maybe the leadership, something along that line. And we started talking about the drugs, and she's going, you know, the drugs that they're taking are really harsh. You know, you go, look, you may not not necessarily like getting the vaccine, but it's the safest, most effective thing possible because we've tested it. And look, there are lots of people who've had it. Billions. We're now seeing more people going to the doctor because of this horse dewormer. Now, is it to the extent that they made it out to be the stories last week where they're turning away gunshot victims? No, and I didn't think that that was the case anyway, but you do have the places filling up. In fact, Idaho, you go, how'd the virus even find Idaho? Evidently, hospitals in Idaho are beginning to ration health care. This is according to the AP, didn't make this up, not some hippie liberal site. This is the Associated Press saying that public health officials there in Idaho have activated what they're calling crisis standards for care. That's allowing the healthcare institutions to ration at the northern hospitals because, they got more patients than they've got beds. So you got to decide, you know, who do you take? And, you know, the doctor that I was seeing said, you know, she's got a friend in Florida, of course, who evidently they just intubated her mother. And she's really sick. And she had another friend who got it too, but showed no symptoms. And she said they pounded her with everything. Did the Joe Rogan. Threw the kitchen sink at it. Instead of just going, why the hell didn't you just get the vaccine? I mean, that's the thing that stuck between my ears with the Joe Rogan thing. Look, you know, I know Joe Rogan had a doctor administer him the proper dose of the horse dewormer, and it wasn't a horse dewormer. It was an actual FDA-approved drug. I know he had all of the best care you could get. You know, he's not Lugnut running down to the Tractor Supply and grabbing a whole handful with the energy drink. That's my concern. We've got people who are going, well, if it's a little good, the whole bottle will be better. That's a problem. It's a big problem. And one that there's part of me that goes, maybe we need to start rationing, Karen. And my argument back to her was, because I said, you know, I brought this up. And she goes, no, that's not who we are. We're better than that. And we are. And I want to be. I do. I want to help the dim. I do, really. I don't like being the guy who goes, you know, it's your choice. You did this. You own it. She says, no, we're not. We don't do that. We don't do it. And I'm like, you know, at some point, do we not do something? And this is where I went back to her. I said, look, eventually capitalism will step in. If the government is ineffective, if they can't do something to get this under control, if they can't move us in the right direction, capitalism will. Because insurance companies, they don't want to keep paying, you know, $100,000 every time someone gets sick and has to go on a ventilator and is in the hospital for weeks. They don't want to pay those huge bills. That's a shot to their bottom line. They can't buy the new, $70,000 vehicle whenever they want. They got to pay it out in claims. They don't want that. When employers, you know, can't get people to come to work because one guy didn't get vaccinated and now, thanks to him, everybody else has got it. Capitalism is going to have to fix it. And this is where the fun part is. The fun part is watching the folks who keep telling us that we need to rely on the free market. It's going to be fun to watch conservatives turn on the free market. You're already seeing it. You're already seeing it. Corporations can't tell me what to do. Well, wait a second. You just said corporations can say they don't have to make cakes for the gay people. So wait a second. You can't have corporations can do whatever they want until it affects me. Oh, no, that's not how it works. Some people think that. The reality is corporations are going to figure this out. They don't want to be liable for it. They don't want to pay for it. And eventually, like I said, if government can't or won't, corporate America will. And maybe it's in the form of, and we've already seen airlines that have done this, charging higher premiums for your health insurance, higher co-pays and deductibles, co-insurance, which I love that one. wait a second, I've got insurance. Why do I need co-insurance? Corporate America will figure it out. And like on election night 2016, when my conservative friend said it's going to be interesting watching liberals turn into states' rights people, this is going to make it interesting for me to watch cons turn on corporate America. Because, like I said, they're going to protect themselves. Because they're in the business of not being sued. They're in the business of making as much money as they can for themselves and not sharing for the rest of us. So I think it's going to be interesting. I'm actually kind of looking forward to that on a certain level. When the lawsuits start hitting, because there are a bunch of moneyed groups out there who want to sue companies into, you've got to allow them to come in unvaccinated. Going to be interesting to see where the courts go. Because understand, our Supreme Court, back to what I was talking about before, very much in the pocket of corporate America. In fact, almost three quarters of the cases that come before the court where the Chamber of Commerce has thrown in a brief have gone their way. Going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Bob Ney is going to be here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2011. That was the day hundreds of ILWU strikers blocked railroad tracks near Longview, Washington. They hoped to stop grain shipments from moving in and out of the EGT grain terminal. Longshoremen had been sitting down on the tracks throughout the summer, resulting in over 100 arrests. No trains had moved in or out of the terminal since July. But then a federal judge issued an injunction against ILWU pickets. The BNSF Railroad tried to move grain once again. ILWU picketers in Vancouver were able to hold off the train until police forcibly dispersed the crowd. Then, hundreds gathered at Longview to block the train from coming in. That's when police went on the offensive. They used clubs and pepper spray against the longshoremen, arresting 19. They threw ILWU President Bob McElrath to the ground. Rumors spread that police had broken his arm. Hundreds of regional longshoremen rushed to Longview. The Seattle and Tacoma ports shut down in protest. The next morning, 10,000 tons of grain were opened onto the railroad tracks. The grain export terminal was the first to be built in the Pacific Northwest in almost 30 years. EGT hoped to undercut the powerful ILWU, who controlled operations at the port since its founding in the 1930s. The union refused to agree to work 12-hour shifts at straight time. The EGT hoped to break the hiring hall by refusing to recognize maintenance and inside workers at the terminal. They then attempted to fill jobs with workers from the operating engineers. But the ILWU persevered. By the end of January, EGT had backed off many of its demands, negotiations resumed, and days later, the contract was signed.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So President Biden's going to give an address on Thursday night on the pandemic. And look, the reality is we need to do a lot of stuff and quickly, as this is still ramping up. He's going to have a six-prong strategy. And I don't know which one of those prongs is going to go get the nitwits who refuse to get vaccinated. I don't know how you get there. I don't know how you get, is there a prong on there to have some nitwit woman not breathe on my neck without a mask? Is there a prong for that? I sure hope so. I sure hope there's a way to get stupid to stop doing dumb things. I just kind of throwing that out there. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come with us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, a six-pronged strategy. I mean, there's a new strategy. Is this a new strategy?
Well, I think some things are going to be new in it. You know, I mean, he's going to, obviously the president's going to reinforce, you know, exactly what you were talking about to, you know, get inoculated, get the vaccine, wear a mask, you know, different, especially states where this has really, you know, become a problem. Kentucky, for example, is in a, you know, very bad situation, as is, you know, Florida and Arkansas and, you know, the states. That doesn't mean the other states are immune from, you know, from doing something. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, some new ideas they might have. He'll reiterate some of the old ones, too.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, do the right thing. You know, maybe do we need to bring Skip Lee back or Spike Lee back and get him to go, hey, just do the right thing.
Right. I mean, the numbers are going up with the amount of people vaccinated. It just needs to go up, obviously, faster, and should have went up a long while back faster, obviously.
Yep.
You know, that would have helped. One thing, too, the information they need to get out there, I'm hesitant to, you know, even bring this up, but my father, he's 98, and I went to the pharmacy 3 days ago, and I asked about getting the booster, you know, the third shot. He had Moderna.
Right.
They said, oh, yes, bring him in. But then today's story said that it's not going to be, the booster is not approved till September the 20th for Moderna. So I'm thinking, okay, so does it need to be officially approved? So some of the press stories, I think, are not helping.
Yeah, no, I've heard that, you know, if you're in the, in like your father clearly would be in the risk category, that you can get access to it. Like, I can't get it. You need a doctor to say that you have a condition that they want to make sure you're at the front of the line, and I get that.
Also, when they say approved for September 20th, that means for the general population.
That's kind of my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, some of the media reports, when you read them, I'm like, okay, could they please rewrite them?
Yeah.
Well, the national media.
It's about getting stuff out.
Purposes.
Yeah, it's about getting stuff out. We got to churn, man. Got to get stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I look at this story out of Idaho. Did you see this where the health officials there are saying, you know, the northern part of the state, if you need to ration care, start rationing because we're full.
Right. Well, that's Kentucky. Kentucky's hitting the same thing, full with the hospital beds, as they said in the northern part of Idaho.
Now, the thing that's interesting to me at this moment, you look at a lot of these rural communities. That desperately need investment in healthcare. They desperately need investment in infrastructure for healthcare. And this is, you know, one of those things that, you know, kind of pops up. I mean, we've got counties in this state that don't actually have a hospital in them. They might have a clinic, but if you need to go to an actual hospital, you're trucking it somewhere else. And this is one of those moments where you go, you know, we should be investing heavily in making sure that, oh, I don't know, we've got enough beds for people, especially as the country gets older. Which is why I think, you know, an investment bill, much like they're trying to push here, is not a bad idea. But it looks like Joe Manchin's kind of staying the stick in the mud.
Well, I think, you know, with Senator Joe Manchin, it's now boiled down to some numbers that he's thrown out there. He'll support, according to the article, which is not Fox News, it was Politico. And according to it, he said he'll support as little as $1 trillion of the $3.5 trillion. Other sources say that the most he'll support, it goes up a little bit, $1.5 trillion. So at this point in time, because the Senate is 50-50 and because they don't have and won't have one single Republican vote, and it starts to get a little shaky in the House, too, because the Speaker has a three person majority, you know, with votes, then I think that they're going to, obviously, they've got to take this off the front pages. I mean, I'm all for transparency, but somebody's got to sit down. You can't do it at a press conference with, you know, Senator Schumer and Manchin, et cetera. This is going to have to be you know, breakfast with somebody, and they've got to decide where they want to be. And then at that point in time, too, I think it's going to be important of the verbiage and how the Democratic leadership side handles it. You know, I mean, with this weird situation of 50-50, people have to face a fact. It is 50-50, and he's not going to go with $3.5 trillion. And that's the way the cards are falling now. So I think they've got to get a strategy and, you know, find out where he wants to be. By the way, have you seen some of the statistics? He's not in West Virginia, not necessarily really grabbing the polling numbers as a result even of all of this.
No, because I think that, you know, the people that I know in West Virginia, they want this investment. They need this investment. What he should be doing, and I've said this from the beginning, and I'm not saying he's not doing it now. He should be, you know, he's got all this power. He should be leveraging a huge chunk of this to come to his state.
Right, exactly.
I mean, isn't that what you would do? I mean, you spent years in Congress. Wasn't bringing home the bacon part of it?
Yes, I was called one time the Prince of Pork because of things I put in the Ohio budget at the time. And I said, I resent that. I want to be called king, not prince. You know, I brought back
that's
a
your
lot
job,
of
man.
I brought back a lot of, you know, my taxpayers sent that money to Columbus, Ohio at the time I was in the legislature. I thought, well, we need to take it back home, you know, for the jobs and the resources. And you're right about West Virginia. That's why his numbers are not, you know, way over up over the top. He's below Senator Shelley Moore Capito, and she's Republican. But the bottom line is, you know, Sanders wants $3.5 trillion. You know, he's been the lead on this, and Manchin is probably at $1.5 trillion. So somebody's got to sit down and decide the numbers first. You can't plug language into numbers and then change the numbers, because that's what this does. By September 15th, there's a draft.
Yeah.
And they're plugging thoughts and numbers and child tax credits and schools and everything into $3.5 trillion. Now, if it's not going to be $3.5 trillion, they have to know that so they can plug the goals and ideas into whatever, $1.5 trillion, $1.8 trillion, I don't know, you know, whatever it would finally be. Yeah. But they're going to have to decide that. Then they can move on and claim a victory.
Yeah,
they're still
going to
have the language. They'll have a little bit less money.
Yeah, but here's my problem with all of this. You know, this still keeps biting at them. It's still in the news. It's still a headline, especially
right.
In a moment where right now, you know, the Republicans have given, you know, I think given the Democrats a great gift with what they're doing in Texas. That should be left as the headline every day. Don't let them chime in with, oh, hey, by the way, Joe Manchin doesn't want to invest in the country. Or am I missing something here?
No, I mean, I think that, again, I was saying earlier the verbiage that's used. If they don't have the votes, they have to deal with Manchin. And of course, there's a couple more, but you know, Manchin's the lead on it. And they've got to come to terms and put the best, you know, face forward on it of beginning the process to change, you know, which direction they want the country to go in. And how they want to do it. So, cutting to the chase here, let's say that they're going to become innovative and really, you know, help people more with child tax credits, right? Or they're going to help with, you know, after-school programs or whatever they're going to do
right.
To help people with kids. All right. Well, they're still going to help people with kids. They're just not going to have as much money, but they're going to start some, you know, new programs and ideas. So I think they've got to plug that number in, go with what they were going to go with, and, you know, then they will aim at some point in time to get an additional bill somewhere along the line that will plug into the ideas that they passed, because they've got to pass them in the House, too.
Yeah, this is where I keep going back to my...
It's a big moment.
I keep going back to my original mindset on all this, is that I fear at the end of the day we end up with nothing. And I know I've got friends who are very confident both bills are going to pass. And don't worry, Rick. But have we not seen movies like this before?
No, I don't think there's a I don't have a confidence level. I'm going to put the infrastructure, transportation, roads and bridges bill, I'm going to put that at 75%. I'm going to put the $3.5 trillion as it sits, $3.5 trillion, at 30%. That's where I would, you know, throw the odds. You notice I didn't say, you know, 100% on the infrastructure. It could slip and fall. And the, one of the reasons it could, there could become infighting. There could be lack of votes because if they're not going to, if they're just going to dismiss the $3.5 trillion, there are some people that won't support the infrastructure, roads and bridges. So I'm with you. This is a very dangerous process right now. It's a tough process. They're running out of time. But the one thing's for sure, they can't accept nothing. If they accept nothing, they're going to have a problem.
Yep. No, you're right. I mean, look, as I said,
they're not going to get a break for, quote, not passing the, quote, liberal bill.
Right.
They're not going to get a break for that. They're going to be deemed the do-nothing, you know, group.
Absolutely. They've got to get something out of this so that next year's election is all about abortion. You know, and I it's not an issue that I'm overly, you know, on top of. It's not my issue. I hope I'm on the right side of it. But the Republicans, I think, gave them a gift because every woman I know, and I don't know about you, but everyone that I know, they are fired up about what's going on in Texas.
Well, they are. And again, on the if this, you know, keeps up with the headlines on the infrastructure and the human infrastructure and the losses, et cetera, the base then, yes, it will be excited about what the Supreme Court's done. I agree. But the base also will become disillusioned. And I said this the other day. You can't go home to the state and say, well, we're 50-50. Now, if you're a Democrat senator, we're 50-50. You need to give us more people. Now, this is true. You say, dude, but you need to give us more people. We don't have enough. People's mindsets, I've seen this on the Republican side. Their mindset is you run the Senate, and you have the vice president, you have the vote. That will be a lot of people's mindset.
Yep.
You can't explain your way out of 50-50, so they have to make something work.
It's got to work. Got to go. Okay. The Republicans understand. I think they know they're in a little bit of trouble, and they're shuffling around their fundraising scheme, moving out of New York, leaving Wall Street and heading down to Tampa. It's right in November, which should be a peak time for COVID in sunny Florida. But bringing the Donald back as the front and center guy.
Guess who lives in Florida, you know, and they're saying New York because the circumstances are beyond their control. They normally have a big December retreat. But again, they are moving it to Tampa, and they're bringing Trump out. Now, this will be the GOP House campaign arm, the House Campaign Committee for the Republicans. And, of course, they want to start this out with Trump to load up the, you know, the coffers on it. And yes, they're moving it to Florida.
Well, I guess that's, you got to do what you got to do. And Florida, I guess, is as good a place as any.
A
bunch of
old
white people.
I think with the Republicans deep down, Rick, if they would be honest about it publicly, you know, they'll take Trump for the raising of the money that they would really, really prefer he not run. The powers to be, I'm talking about in Congress.
Oh, no, I've heard that numerous times. But, you know, the thing is he, and you know, he gets the base all tingly in the panties, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a money raiser.
And finally, why is Joe Biden's staff worried?
You know, this is one where I'm going to say the chief of staff needs to have a come to the chief of staff meeting, and they need to calm down. Okay, they're worried about President Biden. This is the staff, and it's leaking out of the White House. I mean, it's not one of those horrible, horrible leaks, but it's one of those, you know, we're wringing our hands and we want everybody to know it. And they're worried about the staffers, about, you know, the president taking questions. One time he turned around when somebody asked him a question. They don't want that to happen. They don't want him to veer off his orchestrated messaging. They don't want that to happen. The staff wants it to stop, you know, on and on. And the only thing I've got to say about this is that as far as gaffes, people make gaffes. The president's pretty candid. When you're candid, you will tend to then, you know, make some gaffes the media will like to pick up on.
Yep.
But let's go back to the history of 4 years of the gaffe master, all right, of the constant hourly gaffes by Twitter or whatever of President Trump. If the staff's all worried, he almost could have won, okay, the election. So I think they need to calm down. Let Biden be Biden.
Yep.
And you can't, you know, if you orchestrate him and he won't answer questions and you try to do that with him, they just need to calm down. Biden has survived 30 years in public office, the VP, he won the presidency, and, you know, people are pretty used to gaffes from the last one. So this isn't going to be the end of the world if he has a few here or there.
No, Biden is a gaffe machine. That's one of the things I love about him, because he's honest.
It's going to be okay. And so when they wring their hands and they want to have him not answer questions, it's like, okay, you know, calm down. Let's be adults and let the president be the president and do your job in the White House and make the trains run. And that will make people out in the hinterland, you know, happy with the presidency. So, yes,
I love the fact that he's Uncle Joe, who's going to on Labor Day show up at a union meeting, bring sandwiches, and call some guy's mother just to say hi. I love that about the guy.
He's fine. I mean, he's done a couple gaffes that actually helped Obama out of some problems, like the LGBTQ. You know,
So,
history's shown that the. He's all right with it. I mean, he's not making the end of the world gaffes.
Nope.
And so I read with a little bit of disdain for the staff. Just calm down, take a chill pill. He'll be all right.
He'll be fine. Never once have I heard him say, "Drink bleach and shove a light up your behind."
Right. There you go. When he gets to that point, you can orchestrate him.
Then
we
can start talking. He comes up with some harebrained scheme like that, then we got problems. Until then,
you're
right. He'll be fine.
Right. He'll be okay.
But I appreciate the time, Bob. Good
thank
stuff.
You. Oh, thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, I mean, you know, I one of the things I like about him is he's authentic. And having met him a couple of times over the years, the same guy you get, you know, on the press conferences, the guy you meet, you know, in the ballroom having a drink. It's one of the things I like about him. Let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2011. That was the day hundreds of ILWU strikers blocked railroad tracks near Longview, Washington. They hoped to stop grain shipments from moving in and out of the EGT grain terminal. Longshoremen had been sitting down on the tracks throughout the summer, resulting in over 100 arrests. No trains had moved in or out of the terminal since July. But then a federal judge issued an injunction against ILWU pickets. The BNSF Railroad tried to move grain once again. ILWU picketers in Vancouver were able to hold off the train until police forcibly dispersed the crowd. Then, hundreds gathered at Longview to block the train from coming in. That's when police went on the offensive. They used clubs and pepper spray against the longshoremen, arresting 19. They threw ILWU President Bob McElrath to the ground. Rumors spread that police had broken his arm. Hundreds of regional longshoremen rushed to Longview. The Seattle and Tacoma ports shut down in protest. The next morning, 10,000 tons of grain were opened onto the railroad tracks. The grain export terminal was the first to be built in the Pacific Northwest in almost 30 years. EGT hoped to undercut the powerful ILWU, who controlled operations at the port since its founding in the 1930s. The union refused to agree to work 12-hour shifts at straight time. The EGT hoped to break the hiring hall by refusing to recognize maintenance and inside workers at the terminal. They then attempted to fill jobs with workers from the operating engineers. But the ILWU persevered. By the end of January, EGT had backed off many of its demands, negotiations resumed, and days later, the contract was signed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, I got some interesting and hopefully really great news from one of my really brilliant listeners, who the guy who keeps me up to date on what's going on with the COVID breakouts and the predictions, spends lots of time working on models and honestly has been almost right spot on every step of the way. He sent me an article that, you know, could be, you know, something that would just be fantastic if we could do it. Evidently there's some testing going on, according to this fizz.org website. Evidently they're claiming that there's a fridge-free COVID-19 vaccine that are grown in plants and bacteria. This, again, way over my head. But they have nano engineers, according to the story, at the University of California, San Diego, who have developed this vaccine that can take the heat. That's the thing. And if you can get this to places, you know, around the world that desperately need it, because, you know, refrigeration is not something that you're going to be able to do, this could be a game changer globally. Now, obviously, the article says that, you know, they're testing it in mice right now. They want to make sure that it's safe and all that. But the fact that, you know, that we're this far down the road of going, hey, you know, we might be able to get something that is a little more stable, a little easier to get to some of the other places around the world, you know, maybe even here in some of the places where, you know, I don't know if you've been to parts of Appalachia. Work needs to be done. And I go back to, you know, with the infrastructure, something we desperately need, which is why, you know, as we were talking with Chris Hahn earlier, you know, I talk to people all the time, never hear anybody go, no, we can't spend that. We can't invest in that. No, we never heard anybody tell me that. I've had some people say $3.5 trillion is a lot of money. And I go, yeah, it is, but we desperately need it. In fact, you go back to the American Society for Civil Engineers. They point out to get just our hard infrastructure up to date would take $4.6 trillion. We're only doing, what, about a quarter of that with the $1.2? And you go, we need massive investments. We need to remake our social safety net that's been for the last 40-plus years assaulted at every level. You know, the fact that you still have... It's mind-blowing to me that we can give billionaires massive tax breaks, that we can hand out trillions of dollars for war and for, you know, for homeland security and things that have brought us nothing positive. And yet when we start talking about, hey, we should feed kids at lunchtime, people lose their freaking minds. Oh, you're going to get lazy. It's a slippery slope to socialism. When we start talking about making sure that we build things in this country and require manufacturing here, oh, you're infringing on capitalism. Well, maybe we need to. Maybe we need to do a bunch of stuff. Maybe we need to be doing it right now. Because I'll tell you know, the way things are going, there's not a sunny light at the end of this tunnel. But I'm looking forward to what President Biden has to say on Thursday. If you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Be sure you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of that stuff. Anywhere you get your podcast, we are there. And if you find a place where we're not, let us know. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show. where working people come to talk.